Hi, and welcome to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Miriam Levine. Miriam Levine's new book, The Dark Opens, is the winner of the 2007 Autumn House Poetry Prize, selected by Mark Doty. She is the author of three previous poetry collections. Her poems have appeared in American Poetry Review, Harvard Review, The Kenyon Review, The Paris Review, Plowshares, and the Pushcart Prize Anthology. She is a recipient of a National Endowment for the Arts Fellowship and grants from the Massachusetts Artists Foundation. Her poem, Ocean Drive, was recently featured on Garrison Keillor's Writer's Almanac. Levine lives in Massachusetts and Florida. Hi, Miriam. How are you?
Great to be here with you in Pittsburgh.
That's right. Nice to have you here. And you have this great new book, The Dark Opens by Autumn House, and congratulations.
Thank you so much. It was a thrill.
Yeah.
Really. And to meet the people from Autumn House and to have Mark Doty choose the book, it was very, very unexpected. One of those phone calls that seldom comes but did come this time.
That's great. I want to make sure to mention Michael Sims, who is the executive director of Autumn House, and thank him for all his great work. So.
Yes, absolutely. Double thanks, triple thanks.
Okay. Okay, so you're going to start with some poems from The Dark Opens?
Yes, I'd like to read from that book, and I'll read the title poem, which is called Candlewood. I like to write poems that are set in specific places, and this poem is set in a place called Candlewood, and it's dedicated to a friend whose name is Julia. We go into the dark, and the dark opens. Boats tipped with light and moon on the water. There is no difference between the tree and the shadow of the tree. There is no space between light and the wave coming shoreward. No break between the voice and the word. There is no difference between your breath and your dear life. There is no end of you. Next poem that I'd like to read, it's a little bit different. This one is the Ocean Drive poem, and the setting here is South Beach, actually, Ocean Drive. Some of the listeners might be familiar with this area. Ocean Drive. And it, too, is a kind of love poem. Some of us rush from our houses while it's still light to reach the green allée and the red-lit colonnade. We press our noses deep into the opening frangipani, and when the Latin band begins, we dance to the end of the song. We dip our children into the ocean and drink their salty smiles while 2 feet away a man lies drunk in the grass. The sun will burn him again. His shoes are gone, and his clothes have dried to his body like a shroud. In the end, we all have to lie down. If I'm lucky, you'll touch my hand, and I'll remember all the good you have done me and your beauty. No one was more beautiful. Your wet black hair, your hands full of roses. Ah, love poems. The next poem is also set in Florida, in South Beach. And I don't usually write about politics, but this is my take on the political poem. And it's called My Kind of Socialism. If I remember to call out Buenos Dias, Caballero, to sullen Oscar from Guatemala, he stops sweeping and answers, Senora. His sly, young again eyes, my laugh, equals salute for a second. Sabrina's ready to flip out behind the post office counter, yet when I trill, honey, just doodads for Valentine's Day, no insurance. Her furious face softens as her fingers hover over the little flags of the stamps. So I go about my day, of no special good works. It's so easy to feel consequential, though I'm shyer than I seem. But at the beach belonging to all of us, everyone surrenders to a child's laugh, all of us buoyant, naked lovers, big bellies, no one speaking or listening, striped umbrellas, a fleet of fluttering carousels. If I shouted, caballero, caro, mi amor, preciosa, I would only startle the man who gives himself to the sun with spread legs and outflung arms. That shivering girl, I won't make her jump, doesn't like the towel off. Why would she? Slim as lightning, with the huge Atlantic dripping from her hair. I like to be near the ocean. Here's a poem with another girl in it, and it's one of those chance things that you see when you go out, when you get on the subway, when something strikes you. Very often poets are asked, you know, where do you get your information from? Where do you get your inspiration from as well? Well, here it comes from just this chance vision, fleeting, of someone I'll probably never see again. And it's called Girl on the Subway. Her blouse is made of transparent linen with cloudy white flowers across the shoulders. The ends, just a few, of her long blonde hair cut to form a point at her waist like a shawl, swing back and catch on the knee of the man directly in back of her on the aisle. He can't feel them through denim jeans and doesn't see the gorgeous spider silk shine. We've all had such moments and not even noticed.
If you just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Miriam Levine. She's reading from her new book, The Dark Opens, which is the winner of the 2007 Autumn House Poetry Prize, selected by Mark Doty. Miriam, I wanted to ask you about these love poems. It seems like they're all love poems almost to me, you know, love poems to humanity, and there's so much tenderness in them, and some kind of forgiveness, it seems, for everyone's humanity, that there's a lot of room in them to be human.
Yeah, I think that that's there. At least I hope that's there. And I'm really grateful that you picked up on it, you know. And that tenderness might have something to do with my age, with just being glad that I'm walking around, that I'm out there on the subway, and that I'm seeing these lovely things. Some of my earlier poems had a different voice. Not necessarily that it was a bad voice, but it was different. And I hope to be open to those moments, you know? I really do.
Yeah, it sounds like you are. Can you talk a little bit about, I don't know if it's a balance or an interplay between the things of this world and the things of the edgeless floating world that shows up in your poems, because this word edgeless came up in describing your poems.
Yes, I think edgeless is a good word, and I think another word is the word dissolving. Some of the poems that I've been writing recently, I noticed that I'm using that word dissolve a lot. It's a feeling of going to the limit, but not necessarily in the way that we've heard of the romantic poets going to the limit, you know, climbing the Alps or attaching a bungee cord to yourself and jumping off the 7th Street Bridge or something like that. But it's a feeling of stillness and awareness. Of course, the paradox here is that for me to observe the girl on the subway, for instance, I really don't speak to her. So it's that odd thing of being connected And yet being in a place, I mean, maybe the Buddhists would call it a meditative noticing place. And if she turned to me and began to speak, it would probably be a different type of poem. Whitman's got the poem about, you know, wandering and observing the sleepers. It's as if your subject is quiet in a way that you, in the actual life, on the subway, you can possess them without doing damage. And then when you remember love in a poem like Ocean Drive or Candlewood, you touch them in memory.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, how does a writer know then, if they're doing that, how does a writer know if they're projecting all this stuff onto the subject, onto what's the person or thing being observed?
I think you have to really forget about that.
You have to
because that's going to make you very, very self-conscious
right.
and putting things on them. And for me, what solves that problem completely and will, you know, get rid of any self-consciousness or self-doubt about it is if you pay attention, like a painter, a particular type of painter, to the specific detail, to the man on the beach, you can't go wrong if you use your eyes and your ears. You'll see the skin being burned by the sun while he's oblivious. You'll see the way the girl's hair is cut and the way it swings. And in order to do that, you have to forget about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Which can be really fun. Forget
yeah.
about yourself.
Yeah. That self stuff all the time, right?
It's tedious.
Yeah. What a weight.
Okay. One more question on that. When you're talking about dissolving, not as in the romantic tradition exactly, but you're not talking about dissolution or obliteration or losing the body. You're talking, no.
No, I think it's more losing that the sense of what my mother used to call the big I am.
Okay.
And what you called, you know, maybe the self-consciousness about projection and that kind of thing. And reaching that tender state, which is a sort of dissolve.
Okay. Okay, this is interesting. Writing this down. Can we hear more poems, do you think?
Yeah, okay. I'd like to read more, Jan, thank you. Okay, this one also is a poem that's in response to the photographs of a great, great photographer called Ache, a French photographer who decided that he would photograph Paris, and he would go out at dawn before there was any traffic and take pictures. And then I had the great pleasure of looking at his pictures through the magnifying glass. And this is called In the Magnifying Glass, and it's a tribute to Ache. In Ache's photos, some people dissolve in long exposures. A white blur tells me someone was there, someone moved and disappeared. But under my magnifying glass, I can make out a wisp of a girl, dressed like a crumpled flower, a face in the hedge, a dog at loving attention. The streets glisten with rain, white sky above the filthy scarred buildings. Clouds are always moving. There's a boy at a window looking down from the dark triangle made by the drape caught on his shoulder. His face grave as a hero's on a coin. None makes an impression on the severe beauty of the streets, not the man with alert, ardent eyes or the woman whose white dress skirts the damp road, clasped hands like two tiny lockets. White flames of the sycamore leaves, blazing white stairs. It's interesting, that poem has the word dissolve in it. And in those old cameras that he had to use at the end of the 19th century, you had to keep the lens open for a long time to get this exposure. Here's a very different kind of poem. It's also a reaction to the work of an artist who came long before us in the Italian Renaissance, an artist called Simone Martini, who did a marvelous painting called Annunciation to the Virgin. And the poem is called Knowing, and it begins with Mary's hand, the Virgin Mary's hand. Mary's hand is hooked like a claw at the neck of her dress, the sleeve edged with red, a red book in one hand. The Bible is so full of blood. She turns her back on the angel, Our Lady of fury and sorrow. Only a monster wants to see her son nailed to the cross. Even the lily in a pot on the floor knows the future, its black stem bristling with thorns. So much gold, the angel all in gold, like a Christmas ornament. That fabulous branch in the angel's hand, she won't touch it. She knows the future because the painter looking back through time makes her know. We know too, in a general way, how life will end, and before the end, sorrow and pain. Is our sorrow any less than hers? I don't know. If we see angels, they lock us up. Most of us don't see them. In spite of what we know, we still don't turn away. In our ordinary lives, we usually take the flower. It's gorgeous, we'll say, and forget the flower is dying as we are.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Jan Beatty, and my guest tonight is the poet Miriam Levine. And she's reading from her new book, The Dark Opens, winner of the 2007 Autumn House Poetry Prize, selected by Mark Doty. These ekphrastic poems that you're writing, I wanted to ask you about the process of looking, of watching. Is it the same process watching like a living human on the side on the subway and watching a living painting, you know? Or is it that same kind of dissolving, or is it different?
It's similar, because even with the girl on the subway, with the man on the beach, who's been, sleeping there for hours, first there's the shock of seeing it. And even though there's tenderness, there's that maybe shock's an overused word. It's that moment of awareness where everything seems to open up suddenly and you feel close to what you're looking at. The same thing happens when you look at a particular painting. The difference with the painting is, like Simone Martini, is that there's a stillness there and it doesn't move. So I can stay, it's sort of like looking at a sleeping person who doesn't shift in his or her sleep. So after that moment of oh, which, the ode, the poem of praise, if you look at Horace, very often those poems begin with the big O, the big letter O, that wonderful O of exhalation. And wandering through a museum or opening a book of pictures, like the Ace pictures, and sometimes getting the magnifying glass. It would be, for me, not a medical person, to put a person under the magnifying glass. No, I can't do that. And then with the painting, I can also look up things. The Catholic tradition is not my tradition, but I can find out more about the Virgin Mary. And unless I tried to interview the girl on the subway, I couldn't go to that next step.
Right, right. Although if you notice something about her that, I don't know, something she was wearing or something, you could look something up in regards to that.
But exactly, or even a particular kind of a hair.
Right.
Style,
mm-hmm.
A particular color. I had a student who had this wild hair, and I said, "What shade is that?" And she said, "Manic Panic."
Yeah, they have great names for hair, don't they? Hair color. Yeah, I like that idea of this, you know, painting as a sleeping person. Mm-hmm. You know, can you talk at all about the urge or obsession? I don't know what it is with you to go to the edge with ecstasy and the frailty of the body, to sort of combine those, not combine them, but have them both in the same poem or the same area.
I think it's part of my nature to do that. And it's very, very mysterious about why. I had a writer friend, actually the writer Lewis Hyde, who at one time worked as a counselor for alcoholics, and donuts were my thing, not booze. And Lou and I talked about this. He also wrote an essay about John Berryman that had to do with John Berryman's drinking. And Lou said an interesting thing. He said, there's something in humans that makes us want to live with spirits. And what he meant by that, he said to me, and you know, alcohol is called spirits. So I think it is part of human nature to feel that sense of yearning and searching. For me, that's what religion is. It's not about answers. It's about that opening movement. It's like striking a match and being alive.
Right, the fire of it.
The fire of it.
Yeah.
The fire of it.
Okay. We have time for a few more poems.
Okay. Here's one. It's called Reunion. And I think it has to do with the very thing that Jan was talking about, the fire. And there is fire in the poem. Reunion. It is a shock to hear wind rattle the door after such a still day. A shock to feel cold air pour into the narrow room. The draft bends the candle flame and peels away smoke in one long curl. There is a single tulip in a vase, the only one to come back this year. Stamens like burnt wicks and silky petals curling back and back until they have to drop, careless of themselves, as I used to be. It is wonderful after all this time to watch you as you seem to listen to our friends when their talk runs ahead, and you are thinking your own thoughts. The wind picks up again, you feel it too, and open your lips to get more of it, your eyes gold-flecked and slanted, tawny irises ringed with amber, wing-shaped shadows at the corners, and deeper in, a weary glamour. It is a shock clearing your place after you've left to find my hand resting where you touched, here and here, marking time slowly on the table, on the arm of your chair, to feel you are still in me, as red is in the flower. The last poem that I'll read.
Well, I think we have time for a few more.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
And here's the end of spring, and here is the ecstasy poem. Look at that Daphne, buttoned into her coat of leaves, nothing but leaves, 1,000 uniforms edged with white. If I hadn't seen it, I would never believe it could come back loaded with blossoms. I would never believe I could walk out the front door into the fragrance of honey and fire. It's only a room with the ceiling blown off, I'll say. It's only the scent of Daphne, like the memory of love, everything soaked in it. Here's a poem about going to the edge. Who knows why it happens? A poem about walking out and walking to the edge in oneself, in one's movement, and a kind of feeling for a moment of not knowing quite where one is. You have to empty out to get filled. Footstep. I heard my footstep, nothing else. My horizon was a hat brim. A sob swelled in my chest. I couldn't catch my breath. Is this all there is? As if to answer, the wind ripped off my hat. Shadows fell from the maples. There was the pond. There was the sky. The morning ghost of a moon. A flood of clouds. The wind moaned. Give me a minute of silence so I can hear my own footstep. Give me back my hat and the shadow like twilight. More, 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 the wind sang. The obedient sparrows covered the grass. And the grass delivered the earth as a booming finale.
The poetry of Miriam Levine, reading from her new book, The Dark Opens, published by Autumn House Press. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jan.
It was great. You've been listening to Prosody, WYEP's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment News Weekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Alan Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner, Ben Cole, and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in every Tuesday night at 7 for Prosody, 91.3 WYEP.